China went from being the world's capital of totalitarian socialism to being the world's capital of freebooting capitalism. This remarkable transformation leads us to ask, how did China's farmers kill China's totalitarian socialism?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 765th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Valparaiso who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today, folks, I'm down in Southern California. Our guest is in Hawaii. Our studio's in Santa Cruz, California. And you are all over the world. So to pull this one off, we need some talented engineers, and we have them aboard today, Easton Allen and Bill Graff back at Broadcast Central. So thank you, gentlemen. Folks, in 1900, the chief of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, F.H. King, traveled to China with the purpose of introducing that backward country to the modern technologies of agriculture. However, instead of King teaching China's farmers about the blessings of modern technology, Chinese farmers taught King a lesson in the blessings of space-intensive farming. In his seminal book, Farmers of 40 Centuries, King wrote, and I quote, 4 acres of cucumbers handled by American field methods would not yield more than this man's half acre, and he grows besides 2 other crops the same season. The difference is not so much in the activity of muscle as it is in alertness and efficiency of the gray matter of the brain. Now, King was not the only one to try to teach China's farmers of 40 centuries a lesson. In the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, the communist regime of Mao Zedong, in order to create a more fair and just society, established a totalitarian socialism that turned China's farmers into slaves with far less freedom than the slaves that worked the plantations of the American South. Mao's great leap forward, however, resulted in 30 million Chinese starving to death and a bureaucracy rife with corruption. Thereafter, in the blink of a historical eye, China went from being the world's capital of totalitarian socialism to being the world's capital of freebooting capitalism. This leads us to ask today, how did China's farmers kill China's totalitarian socialism? Here to help us find an answer, we have Professor Kate Xiao Zhou, who is the author of How the Farmers Changed China. Kate, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Good. Aloha, everyone.
Aloha, aloha. You're in Hawaii. You're a professor at University of Hawaii. Kate, before you became a Princeton PhD in political science, before you became a professor at the University of Hawaii, before you wrote How the Farmers Changed China, you lived the history of which we are about to speak. Please tell us how, at the age of 11, you became a victim of Mao's Cultural Revolution and how you ended up becoming a peasant in the countryside of China.
Okay, in 1966, when I was 10, the so-called Great Cultural Revolution started. The main purpose of starting the revolution is Mao tried to punish people within the party, trying to help farmers who can have some independence in their way of life. And when that occurred, my father was a college professor. My mother was a high school teacher. My mother was a stamp collector. Her own crime against the state, they both was labeled the enemy of the state. My mother was a stamp collector. She has American and British stamps, and she could not remember who gave her the stamps. That's why she was labeled as a spy of the enemy. So she was immediately put in prison. My mother's hand was actually chopped off. One of the fingers was chopped off during this time. My father was in the labor camp. Both my sister and I would become homeless.
And they sent you to the countryside.
And then after my father, at that time, even though we're homeless, the government did give us food stamps because nobody in China could even buy food with money. Of course, we didn't have money. They did give us food stamps because we were considered urban people. Only in China, the government would provide food stamps for everybody in the city. So if you're not from the city, you're farmers, even you're come to the city, you will starve to death, right?
So, just a second, Kate. So what you're saying is that the government gave people who lived in the city food stamps so that they could eat. Nobody could buy food. You had to have food stamps to get the food.
Yes.
You had to be a resident of the city. If you were a farmer living in the country, you got no food stamps at all.
No. Not only food. Okay. In my city at that time, my city is called Wuhan. At that time, the population is about 2 million. And we have close to 100 different kinds of government ration stamps. So, for example, matches, soap, cooking oil, and any kind of furniture, like a table. For example, if you get married, the government will give you a choice. You either have a bed or a table. You know, they give you 3 pieces of furniture if you have newly married license issued by the government. But not many people get married. You know, they will also need furniture. You don't have it. Including the wash face basin because there's no bathroom. Everybody had to go to the public bathroom. So, you know, people wash their face at home. The basin for the wash face was also need a coupon. Tofu, basic, any kind of basic survive essentials need to be buy with a government-issued coupon.
And then, Kate, they took you to the countryside and made you live in the villages. And how was life different in the villages?
Okay, that one is that, when I was... my father was in the labor camp, my mother was in prison. Suddenly, I fell ill. But it's not a very major thing. So the government asked my father to sign a piece of paper, admit that he had some crime against the government. After issued that piece of paper, they released my father from the labor camp in 1968 when I was 13. Immediately, the government canceled our household registration in the city and forced us to go to the countryside. Because life, you know, the communism, in the name of equality, get rid of inequality, they create the largest inequality, a caste system in the world history. Chinese system was always open. Anybody's son could go to take the exam, become government official. This is the first time if you are born in the countryside, you have died there, there's no mobility. If urban people, they don't behave well, government will punish them by sending them to the countryside to become... They took my whole family, my father, my sister, and I, we went to the countryside. And then there is no... at that time, of course, no soap, no sugar... And, people down there, the place I was sent to is called Jinshan County. It was a relatively wealthy place. At least they have rice. Many other places, people sent places, they don't even have food, you know. So my friends were sent to many other places in my province. They only could have 1 meal a day. At least we could have 2 meals a day, 2 meals a day during that time. So people in the countryside, when we went to the countryside, I learned a lot from the farmers. Right now I call them peasants because they're state kind of serve, right? They could not move anywhere.
I call them slaves because in essence...
You're perfectly right. You're totally right because, you know what, normally farmer, when they had farm alone, they could control what time they do farming, right? And during the communist state, when I was there, there was no holiday. They never get paid. Nobody in the countryside in China from 1956 to 1978, nobody in China's farmer get paid a monthly wage or whatever. They have they have a kind of work point.
Kate, we're going to have to take a quick break here for the commercials.
Okay.
But when we come back, I want to talk about this because you write about how farmers were forced into starving. They were given no food. And in starving, they had to beg the cadres for the privilege of begging for food. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about how the farmers changed China. We will be right back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Michael Olson with Kate Xiao Zhou, author of How the Farmers Changed China. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today, folks, we're talking about a story that will, someplace down the road, I believe, become known as one of the biggest stories of the last 100 years. It's an incredible story about how a spontaneous, unorganized, leaderless, non-ideological, apolitical movement of farmers overthrew one of the most severe regimes of totalitarian socialism ever to exist here among in human history. And of course, we're talking about China. We're talking about how the farmers of China changed China with Kate Xiao Zhou, who is the author of the book. Kate, you were there, you lived it, you saw it. How did the communist regime feudalize farming and turn farmers into slaves?
Yeah, they started with an anti-rich campaign in 1950, as soon as government took over. They used the slogan, you know, land to the tiller, so the majority of people are not rich people. They think, okay, if I participate, take from the rich, I could benefit from it. So they were actually participating in this kind of anti-rich witch hunt. As a result, more than close to 2 million people who are landlord and relatively wealthy farmers were either killed or sent to the labor camp. This violent revolution was supported by the majority of the rural people at that time. But as soon as in 1953, that means 2 years after people got land from the government, was equally distributed, the government banned grain marketing. That means you can only sell food to the government at a below market price.
So essentially, they started taking over the farmers' marketing and forced the farmers to sell their grain at below market price to the government, who would then distribute the food to the city, right?
Yeah. And then by so doing, because they want the industrialization, they want the farmers to pay for the bill. And the farmers did not know this, so they resist by not selling to the government in 1953. So as a result, the government said, in the very beginning, government used militia, government used the army, tried to confiscate the land into the household. But that was costly, also politically not good. So That's how they start the collectivization. Means everybody had worked together as a commune, make it very easy for them to take food without any kind of violence. And so as a result, you know, in 1953, that means 4 years when farmers were able to get land from the government make everybody work at commune. In the commune, okay, you have to work every day. There's no holiday. And in the winter, most farmers used to not work, you know, in the winter. They have a collective project like reservoirs, like government road building, okay? All build this for free. Nobody get paid. Very important. And the farmers had to bring their own food in the cold winter to leave their home and family to go places for government big project, you know? So by so doing, and then when farmers realized this, many of people escaped to the countryside, tried to go to the city. So in 1956, government issued a document, created the hukou system. That means, and together with the food rationing, rural people would not get any food, no coupon whatsoever, whatever they move, unless they stay in a place they were born.
And the hukou system is a household registration, an internal passport, so every household was registered, correct?
Yeah, so but the most important part of the hukou system for the rural people is that they were not giving any food unless they stay put in a place of a designated in their commune. So there's no way you can escape, even go to the mountain, right?
There was no place
because
to go.
There's no place to go. Everywhere else, you have to only get food, you know.
And there was within
the commune production team, yeah.
And there was they even had places called shurong or suo, which were what, jails for the rural people coming to the city. They would throw them in jail.
Runaway
slaves.
Okay, during the Mao's period, farmers lost their rights even to beg. If you have suffered from famine, if your area was suffering, you know, normally people could go to the other places to beg, right? And there's no, if you cannot buy a train ticket or bus ticket without the government document saying that you're allowed to do that. Okay. The local government would not issue that government saying that they failed because there's so many famine victims. So they refused to give them any kind of identification paper. That's why if they leave their commune system, they will starve to death. So they have to stay put. Okay? The difference between Chinese famine and famine elsewhere, like in African, Indian, is that people die secretly, quietly at home. Yeah, I want to talk about how the so-called commune system started with great enthusiasm among farmers participating in the witch hunt of the rich people, and in the end ended with close to 40 million deaths, the new released figure from the government. Government Institute released the newly released to 40 million people died of starvation in 1959 to 1960. The Great Leap Forward was that Mao, everybody had forced commune, and they also industrialization. As a result, you know, both farmers, you know, to eat together in the cafeteria, so the family as a surviving mechanism died out, and then the local government exaggerated their production figure, and you know, as a result, close to 40 million 95% of them in the countryside, definitely in the world history.
Now, Kate...
Exactly, very important, because during the Great Leap Together, within the family is crucial, you know. You can always eat your neighbor's children. It's a norm. But in the commune, you have to eat together. And mothers, most Chinese society in the past women, especially in the North, they didn't work outside. But during the communism, they had to go out in the fields like anybody else. Okay, so as a result, they totally weakened the family as very important. Family in China unit, a social unit, which has been weakened.
Head of the family, no longer the farmer, no longer the person to make the decisions. They took the woman out of the women out of the household, and they made them go to work. And thus, the government became the family. The government became the slaveholder, and the people became the slaves. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Kate Xiao Zhou, who is the author of How the Farmers Changed China. It is the most incredible story I have ever heard, how a group of leaderless, apolitical people overthrew one of the greatest totalitarian socialist regimes in the world. And we will talk about how they did it when we get back from these important messages. Please do stay tuned. Well, folks, how did they do to it? How did a spontaneous, unorganized, leaderless, non-ideological, apolitical movement of farmers overthrow one of the most severe totalitarian socialist regimes the world has ever known? A regime so ruthless, so uncaring, it starved 40 million people to death. How did they do it? That's the question we have on the table today. And Kate Xiao Zhou, author of How the Farmers Changed It. Kate, a PhD in political science from Princeton University, an author, a professor at University of Hawaii. Kate, I have to ask you, how on earth did you ever get this by the political correctness of American academia? This is just exactly the opposite of everything we always hear.
I have to say that at the University of Princeton University, mm-hmm. All my professors are liberal, but one of my majority of them are pretty much tolerant what I'm doing. One of my other fellow students, his name is Dali Yang. He also wrote The Great Famine Death, so that they are relatively tolerant of me. But in Hawaii, it's a totally another story. Okay, I was totally discriminated against in the department, mm-hmm. and they are openly, you know, very narrow. The liberals, at least in Hawaii, in my department, are much more intolerant of different views. So since I was, I was brainwashed, I was one like them. I totally believe in communism and socialism until, you know, I was a victim. I saw that. I began to have self-reflection. And the liberals in my department here in University of Hawaii, they're not tolerant of different views. And, you know, they tried to get rid of me. My former department head came to my office twice, asked me to leave. They said, we don't like you. Why don't you leave, you know? And I said, you know, I have been through cultural wishing. I have seen much more coercive methods that they can do.
Then you have to offer.
So they cannot touch me because, you know, they also have a union. So I'm pretty much, it's the only time the union actually did something good. You know,
well, Kate, when academics look at history, they always look for some person to say this person is responsible for this movement or this activity. And when we Westerners look at the disintegration of totalitarian China, we always say, well, Deng Xiaoping did it. But you don't say that.
No, regime do not commit suicide. Okay. I don't say that because reform is difficult in any country. So as a result, I think that people, you know, how difficult it is kind of reform which will benefit anybody, right? Because the West have to, why in China, you know, the great comparison is between China and Soviet Union. The Soviet Union, when Gorbachev really, the top leader, they really want to have reform. Gorbachev in 1988 said that we should learn from Chinese farmers. I want to give everybody land for 70 years, 50 years, no takers. Why? Because 30% Soviet formal farmer cooperative workers. They have welfare, right? They also get a government subsidy from the machinery. As a result, they're afraid of losing that important part.
And Chinese farmers had no...
They were... After famine, the farmers realized they could not depend on anybody but themselves. So the only thing they want is to be left alone. So whenever there's opportunity, they do something different than the government policy. So when so many people, in the very beginning, it started in the late 70s, people make individual deals with the local government. Okay, just like me to be farming on my own. I give you a quota, you can send to the central government, and you can keep some for yourself, and let me to be alone. So one or two people did that, and the demonstration effect spread like wildfire across China.
But before it did, there were organized resistance. And what happened, for example, to the Hunan farmer Wang, who hung himself, who led an organized resistance, and they went after him?
Yeah. If you know, for example, if you openly, because the government has a legitimate way to use violence against people, right? So if you're openly against the government can put you into jail. The government can destroy household possessions.
Goods.
So you end up with nothing. And then more importantly is that people realize that government is so strong. And those are something to do with Chinese culture is that normally the understanding is that government is to take from people. They realize that. But they say that there's a limit. You cannot just take everything. This is going too far. So in the end, you know, when so many people are doing that, this is why I think is kind of a new theory of social movement. When so many people, okay, they may not organize in an organized fashion, but they know what they want to do is to be get rid of the government control, and that's easy for them to do. When so many people are doing it at the same time, they create a movement.
Then
that
tell
movement
us
is the reason, yeah.
Then tell us about the Xiaogang village and the Baochong Daobu.
Right now, the only trace in the Chinese government document showing that, you know, there are some kind of people get together doing this because they cannot find, who was the first person starting doing that, to leave the commune and then to be on their own. The government could not find. The only thing they can find is the Xiaogang village, because that's the only place they have a document. 18 households get together, you know, and promise take care of the leader's children if they put into jail when they secretly, you know, divided the communal land and began to farm on their own. That's the only one they can find. The most other places is individual dealing with local cutters.
So
among
the
18 household, yeah?
So the villagers got together and agreed to work together and to divide up the land and to farm it for themselves. And if the government came and took away their leaders and killed them, the villagers agreed to take care of the leaders' children.
Yes.
Wow.
So and you can see that you can see the tremendous pressure people have this, and the people really took a total risk doing that. And why it's doing that is so. As a result, I really emphasize this. Okay, when you have a movement.
Okay,
we're
going to have to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. We're going to pick up your Solnam, and we're going to talk about how marriage spread the revolution in China of farmers against the totalitarian socialism of Mao Zedong's Communist Party. We will be right back with Kate Xiaochang, Joe, and you. Do stay tuned.
Great shot, Bob. I think you're on.
I just followed your lead.
Hey, by the way, did you break ground on your new building?
No way. I'm holding off until I see what the future holds.
So you're seeing a fortune teller?
You know what I mean. Things look a little uncertain.
The only thing certain in business is if you're not growing, you're losing. And we just opened our fifth facility last week. If you're following my lead, you'll call General Steel. Their pre-engineered steel buildings could save you as much as half the cost compared to conventional buildings. And they're up in nearly half the time, and back with a 50-year structural warranty.
Yeah, but steel buildings...
Hey, you've seen my building. Does it look like steel?
No, it looks great.
Ask about rebates that could save you up to $20,000. Look, you can stop paying rent and own a building that suits your business better, and probably saves you money by operating more efficiently. In times like these, don't stop spending, just spend wisely.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box. A heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
This is a public service announcement test from TakeMeFishing.org to determine if you need a fishing license and boat registration before heading out on the water. Let's begin. Are you a bear? Do you have a beak? Does your name rhyme with Ald Beagle? Do you dart in front of cars? Here's a tough one. Do you have plumage? Do you rub your body against things to mark them? Do you have webbed feet? No, I mean like a... Were you hatched? Do you have fur? I'm not talking back hair. Does your boat fly south for the winter with the other boats? Regardless of how you answer, you need to be licensed and registered because it helps local conservation efforts protect the very natural resources you enjoy boating and fishing in for generations to come. Do your part at TakeMeFishing.org.
Okay, folks. They came for the rich first, and when they took everything the rich had, they went for the rest of them, and soon 80% of China became total slaves to the Communist Party, and resulting in 40 million people starving to death. Slaves to the extent unimaginable by the slaves that worked the plantations of South in America, so slaves under such strict rulers that the slaves had to, the starving slaves had to beg the local bureaucrats for the right to beg for their food. And yet it happened. A group of people, a group of farmers, an unorganized group of farmers got together and stood up and changed the whole thing. And it started with something called Bao Chang Dao Bu in a little village of Xiaogang. And Kate Xiao Cho, Bao Chang Dao Bu?
Okay, it's the Chinese term for contract production to the household. Before, everybody worked for the commune for the government-controlled collective farms. Now it's a household responsible for production. It's not privatization of land, no. It's just they going to farm on their own, not controlled by government.
Now, did the government give the farmers this right, or did the how did the farmers get this right?
In the very beginning, they just, of course, you know that if you do anything organized against the government can use military to crash you while you'll be in jail. There are in China, the data shows that during the past 50 years, close to 550 million people went to the labor camps. Okay, so that means a lot of people can be sent to labor camps, and that's why people cannot organize. The only successful they can do it is through unorganized means. So that's why the farmers become successful precisely because they were not organized. And but they know what's their choice. The important farmers know. They just want to be farm alone. This is tradition. Both in this great country and in China, they want to be left alone. They don't want controlled by government. So when so many people are doing this, they really change China, because you have close to 80% of the population began to have control over the economic life, not completely, but substantially, of their life.
How did they change
the whole system? Because
how did they get permission?
That the government controls everything.
How did they get permission from the
government? When you have that kind of dramatic change, you change the system. So it's the largest political reform from below. Can you hear me? Mm-hmm.
Yes. How did they change the government's mind?
The change the government mind is this. At that time, Mao died. So when they did that, whatever they have done through secret dealing, that place would have a harvest. So in the very beginning, the government said, okay, do not leave the commune, but we'll allow you to sell some products you have on your, every household after famine, government gives them 2% farming. So they can, the land, they can sell, they can buy grown vegetables. So they will not starve to death, right? So farmers could sell some product on the market. Before 1978, the government won't allow people to sell this. So when government allowed them to sell things in the market, that's actually is an important policy. But as a result, the farmers, everybody want to work on their own, selling things on the market, okay? And then they can keep the rest of the harvest. That's the key. When many people are doing that, the production increased, and then famine stopped immediately. More importantly, people have enough to eat. This time, when government officials report to the center of Beijing, right, there's a power struggle going on because Mao died in 1976. Everybody wants to be number one, okay? Deng Xiaoping and his people want to use that. See, farmers, were not satisfied with status quo. There are revolution going on. So if they totally crack down, that means if they continue to do Mao's policy, not enough food to eat, people's life was miserable. 300 million people would, in the countryside, could experience starvation at that time. So in 1982, the government finally say something like, this kind of farmers' household production is one kind of socialism, because the land still belongs to the state. And government can allow this existence, this kind of thing to accept. That means people at top, Deng Xiaoping, in 82, accept the farmers' rebelling. So when they do that, they claim all of this, to themselves. This is a reform initiative, okay? So one government, so this is another lesson, is that the farmers, unorganized farmers, can be successful when they put no threat, because there's no organization. They try to figure out who was the first farmer did this. The only thing they could figure out is that the 18 household. But actually, individual farmers everywhere was doing this at the same time.
So as in essence, Kate, the government had a tiger by the tail, and they had no choice but to follow the farmers. or starve the entire nation out of existence. Folks, we're going to take a final break, but when we come back, we're going to explore a couple of Chinese sayings, and we're going to have Kate respond to them, and we're going to get a real insight into how the farmers changed China with Kate Zhaozhou. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Right back. And so, a spontaneous, unorganized, leaderless, non-ideological, apolitical movement of farmers bribed itself out from under a totalitarian socialist government to lead a nation into becoming the world's leader in freebooting capitalism. Holy smokes, what a story, as told in How the Farmers Changed China by Kate Zhaozhou, professor of politics, University of Hawaii. Kate, got a couple of sayings here to help to kind of get an insight into this. I'll try to read them. Please forgive my Chinese. It's a bit rusty these days. Mo cha shi duo guo ba. Are you there?
Again? Can you
crossing
read?
The river.
Oh, yeah. Mo cha shi duo guo he, yeah. That means you sailing across the river by feeling the stone on the river because you do not know what's going on. Okay.
And so you use that to describe Deng Xiaoping and the ruling party as they're trying to keep track of this tremendous movement of farmers as they're literally changing China underneath their feet.
That's right. They recognize this because, this is not just, it's very important, I want to emphasize, this is not just a farmers movement for agriculture only. In my book, I talk about how Chinese industrialization and occurred. So this is the largest, most of development, if you look at the world, is urbanization first, then you have economic development. But this is the first case, is the rural people leading market development, leading industrialization in one of the poorest countries, and turn that country become the engine of industrial development in the world.
Yisun Dujian, a strange army suddenly appears.
Yes. That also, Deng Xiaoping said himself that when people from Yugoslavia visited him, he said it's as if a strange army appeared from nowhere. The government didn't know how this came about themselves. So right now the government realized that they were not the leaders. In China, the government are not the leaders of this, the largest so-called capitalist revolution in the world. It is led by farmers.
And because of this movement, rural income among farmers grew 300% in 8 years, in spite of all efforts by the government to hold that down. Kate Zhaozhou, you said something in How the Farmers Changed China that kind of blew my mind, and here it is. The farmers sought always to make the government irrelevant, and to an astonishing degree, they did just that.
Yeah. Because of the famine in China, Chinese farmers realized that they can only depend on themselves. They cannot depend on government. So Chinese farmers have become a strong force for liberty. So the development that occurred in China is nothing strange. Just people once have more freedom on their own. Once you have freedom, you have development.
Kate, we're out of time, but yes. Kate Zhaozhou, thank you so much. How the Farmers Changed China. Get it, read it, free yourself. Thank you so much for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.